Good morning. So, last time we talked about what object files are. So, you may have seen before what compilation that involves multiple steps where we produce these object files from assembly files and then turn those into executables. And we talked about, well, why do we have that intermediate step? And mentioned the main motivation was that, well, we'd like to convert everything to machine code and sort of the data that's going to be in the executable, but we can't quite do that when we only have part of an application, and most assembly files are only part of a program, and we have to combine them with stuff from other assembly files. We could do this by just taking the assembly files directly and putting them together, but that means that we're doing a lot of work of processing assembly files over and over again to produce basically the same machine code. So what we do instead is we make these object files, which have the machine code and data produced, but with annotations to indicate places where the machine code was incomplete because it referred to things from other files or things where we needed to know how the executable was going to be laid out, and also indicating where if there's other things that refer to this assembly file, where in the machine code that corresponds to. Then we talked a bit about some issues in C. We mentioned about pointer arithmetic and arrays in C. So arrays in C are one value stored in memory followed by another, the next value in the array, and so on. So all the elements in the array are right next to each other. And you can do arithmetic on pointers in C, which lets you navigate around an array that's laid out this way. If something's right next to each other, you just add and you get to the next thing. And it turns out, in fact, that in C, the array indexing operator is defined in terms of pointer arithmetic. But that leads to a question, wait a moment, you know, if I have an array of ints, I can't just add one to a pointer to that array to get the next element in assembly. And it turns out in C, when you add one to a pointer to int, it advances by the size of an int, and that's handled by the compiler. We mentioned a bit of syntax things with how structs work, that if you define a struct X in C, well, X is not a name for that struct, it has to be struct X. If you wanted the name X to be available, you have to use something like typedef. And there's some common patterns with that that you might see. And we finished up by mentioning a concept called undefined behavior. So C, unlike many other languages you might use, sort of has lots of different implementations. And they've come to an agreement on what needs to be a C implementation. And there's a standard written down. And the people making the standard deliberately decided that they're just not going to specify something. So some things are what is called undefined behavior, where the C specification says, you can do whatever. And we saw that, maybe somewhat surprisingly, compilers really take advantage of this. They will do different inconsistent things at different times for some of these types of undefined behavior. And one example is signed integer overflow. So sort of the natural thing, like for taking the biggest int and adding one, is you get the smallest int. But compilers don't have to do that because the specification for C says, oh, when that happens, do whatever you want. Doesn't say you have to wrap around, doesn't say you have to crash. So compilers make, and we saw with GCC, in fact, if you give it different optimization flags, we'll make different choices in real scenarios. There's a bunch of other things that are undefined behavior. Just wanted you to be aware of that because it's going to come up if you're programming C. And it's also something that is part of what I mentioned as introducing why we're using C. You know, we said, oh, it has a natural translation to assembly. It's an example of how the natural translation to assembly maybe doesn't happen in reality. Okay, so questions about things we covered last time? Okay, so not seeing them. So based on my look over quiz scores, I think I should go over quiz questions 2 and 3. I can also answer about other quiz questions, but so quiz question 2 was asking, here's an assembly snippet. Let's assume that no integer overflow occurs. What are the condition codes after it finishes? So when this assembly snippet finishes, The last thing that set the condition codes is going to be this compare. So the add's also going to set the condition codes, but it's not going to be the last thing that runs. And after this compare runs, we have to get past this jump less than. And if we get past this jump less than, we'll go back to start. We won't go back to start. So to get past this jump less than, it needs to be that this is going to be the equivalent to if the last result is less than or equal to 0, go to start. Sort of that's the translation in this sort of pseudo C. And the last result is going to be reflected in our condition codes. So in order for us to not go to start, it needs to be, we need to have the negation of this, which is that we're going to have last result is going to be strictly greater than 0. And if it's strictly greater than 0, that means the 0 flag can't be 1, because the 0 flag's only 1 if it was 0, and that's impossible. And the sine flag can't be 1, because the sine flag is only 1 if the result was negative, which is also impossible. So questions? Figure that out. Yes? Question, what if the value in R8 is 0, wouldn't the program never end? Yes, in which case the snippet wouldn't finish executing, which was what we were asking about, what happens after that. Yes, other questions? Okay, then we have question 3, which is about, you know, translating this back to C. And thing to remember is that, so this compare is roughly equivalent to doing a subtract without changing R10. And the way subtract works in AT&T syntax, this is subtract R9 from R10. So we have R10 minus R9, and we're checking if it's less than or equal to 0 to go to the start. So this is equivalent to do this add while R10 minus R9 is less than or equal to 0, or if you do a little algebra, R10 is less than or equal to R9. Questions? Out. Okay. Any other quiz-related questions? Okay. So to today's main topic. So we're going to talk about some other operations that might be provided by hardware. We're going to talk about bit manipulation. So I'm just going to preview. So how do bits work in hardware? So in hardware, we have like wires, which can be like a physical wire. And sort of a way we might represent bits, not the only way, is we might say if we have a high voltage on the wire, it's a 1, if we have a low voltage, it's a 0, and we'll have bundles of these wires to represent values, and we could do that to represent a byte. So this is one way of representing sort of a byte in hardware and physically transmitting it around. And if we're representing numbers this way in hardware, some operations in hardware are pretty simple. So, for example, one operation that's pretty simple with this representation is that if I want to get the first hex digit of this 2-hex digit number here. So, in here I have 0x72, the first hex digit is the first 4 bits. If I want to get that in hardware, it's free. I don't have to do any math. Just, there it is. Right, I just take those bits and ignore the rest. So, it's free. And we're going to talk about, well, how do we do things like this in code? How does the machine make it so it's easy for us to do these operations, which in hardware are super simple? So let's start here. So let's say instead of having this conveniently in hardware, I wanted to do this with C code. So I have a byte represented as an unsigned character, and I want to extract the top hexadecimal digit. Hexadecimal digits I'll call nibbles. So I want to extract the top nibble of that. So if I have OXAB, I want to return OXA. Or if OX72, like in the previous example, I want to return OX7. So how do I write the code there? I'll give a minute. Think about what's a thing I could do. And I assert you know how to do this. You don't need any operators you don't already know about to do this. You can just do this. It's just math, it turns out. Yeah.
You just
turn
the value divided by
16. So the value divided by 16, it's division. So yes, so we can do value divided by 16. I said, why does this work? So if I have OXAB, A is 10 and B is 11, and this is equivalent to 10 times 16 to the 1, is a way we can think of this, because this is the 16th place and this is the 1's place, plus 11 times 16 to the 0, where this 10 comes from here and this 11 comes from here. Right. So that's just how hexadecimal works. If I have another hexadecimal digit, it would be times 16 to the 2, and so on. And if I divide this whole thing by 16 without taking a remainder, this part cancels out, and that disappears into the remainder. The times 0, times 16 to the 0 disappears into remainder, and the times 16 to the 1 gets canceled out, and we get at the 11. Questions about why this works? Okay, so we have a solution. Now let's compare how it works, how efficient it is, to our hardware solution. So it turns out integer division is surprisingly slow. So for example, in the Intel Skylake microarchitecture, which is roughly what my laptop has, it's about 6 cycles for a division. It varies, and it's much worse for like a full 8-byte division. And you might say, okay, 6 cycles, what's a cycle? Well, we have a multiple gigahertz processor, so it's a really, really tiny part of a second. So maybe this isn't acceptably fast, but if we compare it to other operations like addition, the same processor can do 4 additions per cycle. So it's 24 times slower than doing addition. And addition seems like actually a lot more math, because, you know, if we're doing this by hand. Like, it's a lot more work if you're doing addition by hand versus give me this nibble of this hex digit, you know, the A out of AB by hand. And in hardware, it should be a lot simpler. We're just extracting those top wires, right? It's a really simple operation in hardware, and we'd like to expose that to our programs, but the problem is our programs, you know, are working with this division operation, which needs to handle much more complicated cases. Like, we could have been dividing by 7, and that's not so easy. That's why division takes us so much time. And in fact, you know, the processor does expose an operation that's nicer than division for this. And that's going to be something called shift right. So shift right, there's an instruction on x86, which you give it an amount. In this example, the amount is 4. And it moves the bits of the value over, so we end up discarding amount bits. And we have to put the result, you know, you give a register, or you can have a variable shift. You know, variable instead of the constant, it's 4 in this case. So these lower bits go away, and if we think of our extracting the top nibble, this is exactly what we wanted to do. We wanted to get rid of the bottom 4 bits of the value and just have the top 4. Now, there's a bit of a problem here, which is that I'm kind of showing us taking a register that has a bunch of bits and removing 4 bits from it. But we can't actually do that. Registers have a fixed size. We have to put something in the other bits. We have to fill in the top with something. And this instruction, SHR, fills it in with zeros. Just because we have to put something there, so we're going to put in zeros. And it's usually the most convenient thing. So questions about this shift right operator? Okay, so this is doing our get rid of those bits operation that the hardware is so convenient in hardware. It's exposing it as an instruction, and this instruction should be a lot more efficient than division because it's a lot simpler in the hardware. We don't have to worry about like dividing by 7. And we can write our get top nibble function in assembly using this. So here I have a version of it. So I get my argument, which is a byte, and if you looked at the original function, it returns an int. So I convert that byte to an int into EAX, and then I shift EAX, a return value register, by 4 to remove the bottom 4 bits and fill in the rest with zeros. Okay, questions? So the question is, would a compiler generate this for the division that we did? We'll get to that later. But this is an implementation of the function we saw before in assembly that is efficient. Okay, so we have this right shift operation. And one thing we could do is we could hope the compiler knows to generate it. We can also ask for it explicitly in C or C++. That the double greater than sign operator that you may know and see as the CN insertion operator, it started its life, or C++ is the CN, you know, in iStreams insertion operator, started its life as the right shift operator. So this is a way of writing that operation. Questions. Yeah. And then there's was the question I promised I'd get to of, will the compiler generate things for it? Yeah. In this case, the compilers I've seen usually do it in the other way, where they do a byte shift and then convert it to an int. But same thing. So yes, the compilers are aware of this trick. They say, oh, wait a moment, 16 is a power of 2. We can do that with the shift operator. That's going to be a lot faster than actually dividing. A lot more convenient. Okay, so questions about right shift. Okay, so our right shift operator, see, we shift into the zeros. So it basically is the same thing as dividing by 2, a power of 2. So if I'm shifting by y, it's dividing by 2 to the minus y, or I dividing by 2 to the y, or multiplying by 2 to the minus y, and taking the floor that is rounding down. You can see that with here, when I take 10 shifted over 2, this is basically the same as 10 divided by 4 rounding down. That's why I got 2 and not 3. Questions? Huh. Okay. So we know what the shift right instruction does, SHR. So here's some code which uses it. And let's say I declare this in C as int foo taking an int argument and pass negative foo to it. What do I expect as a result? Give you a minute, you can check with your neighbor, see if you agree what's going on. And big thing with this question is that, yes, unfortunately, you still need to know 2's complement. even though maybe you hope that you don't need that anymore after 2150. The question is, does this SHR instruction always put zeros in the upper bits? Yes. Okay. Who would like some more time? Okay, so who thinks A, B, C, D, E, okay, a few, F, and G, H. Okay, so most people figured out that the answer is F, and the reason why is that this SHR, it's going to shift in zeros. And let's talk a little about 2's complement, because I know we probably need to talk about 2's complement. So 2's complement, there's a bunch of ways we can look at it. So one way you can look at it is that normally we have like a 1's place, a 2's place, a 4's place, and so on. And in 2's complement, one way we can think about it is that we, rather than having our top place for a 32-bit number be 2 to the 31's place, it's a negative 2 to the 31's place. Another way we can think about it is we have kind of this circle of our numbers, and we have negative 1 is all 1's, and that wrap around to 0. We add 1 going around this circle, wraps around to 1, 2, and so on, all the way to 0 and all 1's, which is our biggest number. If we add 1 to that, we get 1 and all 0's, which are our smallest possible number. And another thing you might remember with two's complement is sort of our, you know, trick to convert to two's complement is that negative x is flip all bits in x and add one. So those are three different ways of thinking about two's complement. All give you the same answers. And a key thing that comes up here is that we're going to be our shift right operator shifts in zeros. So if we look at this problem here, we're going to have EDI becomes negative 2. And negative 2, well, 2 in binary looks like this. We do the flip all the bits and add 1. And that gives us a bunch of 1s and a 0. So that's the bit pattern that's going to be in EDI. When we shift that over by 1, we're going to get a bunch of 1s. Should do a bunch of 1s and a 1 and a 0 that's shifted in. So we're in fact not going to get just any large positive number. We're going to get exactly this large positive number. So questions? How do I figure that out? Yes. Is first supposed to the value of EDI moves to the EAX? Yeah, so I meant to say EAX becomes this. I wasn't reading carefully. But it's also the value in EDI. But yes, this code doesn't store it in EDI, the code that calls it does. Does that answer your question? Then in the second line, it modifies EAX. Yeah. Other questions? Okay. So that's... So this is kind of inconvenient. And this would seem to mean that there might be a problem with just replacing all our divisions by powers of 2 with shifts. So let's think of how we can fix this problem. And another way of thinking about that is, how would we generally divide a negative number by 2 using the shift right operator we have? And the way we could do that is I'd start with a negative number, so negative x. I can convert it to a positive number, x, by flipping all the bits and add 1. Do my right shift that I know works because we're going to shift in a 0. That's going to be correct for a positive number. And then flip all the bits and add 1 to get negative x divided by 2. So I can still use the shift right operator to divide by a power of 2, but there's something special I need to do to handle negative numbers if I care about them. And also, you might say, wait a moment, which way does this round? So for our positive numbers, we saw the shift right operator rounded down. How is this going to end up rounding here? Well, we're going to round down when we're doing this shift right here. This is down. When we negate that, it's going to be rounding up, which maybe is fine. So what does this look like? Is there a way we can think of this simpler? Well, so what we're doing is we're shifting the number over. Okay, I guess we should say we're flipping the bits, doing some addition, small addition, shifting the number over, then flipping the bits again and doing some small addition. So if we ignore the small additions, basically what we're doing is we're flipping the bits, shifting, flipping the bits. So that's going to be the same as shifting over and shifting in ones instead of zeros. Why flipping in ones? Because we added a zero in the shifting in the middle, and then we flip that zero to a one. So this operation, except for some little rounding issues, is very close to doing the shift but shifting in a 1 instead of a 0 in this upper slots. And when we look at the shift right operator, we didn't think of a reason why you wanted to put in anything but zeros, but it turns out now you have one. So this tells us we can do something like dividing by a power of 2 for negative numbers, and we just shift in once. And one way we could do that is we could do the wrong shift and then fix up the top bits. But we don't have to worry about that, actually, because there's, in fact, an instruction for it. So there's an instruction called SAR, which is called the arithmetic shift right. And it does the shift, but the number it puts in the new bits is 0 if the sign bit, the top bit, started at 0, and 1 otherwise. So it chooses what to shift in based on the top bit of the operand. And remember, in 2's complement, if that top bit is a 1, it's negative. If it's a 0, it's positive. So it shifts in 1s if it's negative. It shifts in 0 if it's positive. So it's doing our approximation of dividing by 2. So we have an operator to do it. We don't even need to manually fix up the upper bits ourselves. There's an instruction that will do all that work for us by shifting in the right thing in the first place, in those new bits. So questions about our arithmetic shift right operator? Okay, so we have this instruction. You might say, how do I access that from C? And basically, the way you do that is if you're using a sign number, the C compiler will know to use the arithmetic shift. And if you're using an unsigned number, it will know to use the non-arithmetic shift, which is called a logical shift. So this is the logical shift is the name. And this is the arithmetic shift. And this is maybe a little weird because for most math operations, it turns out we can get away with using the same instructions regardless of whether it's signed or unsigned. So for addition, subtraction, and most of the time multiplication, like we can use the same instructions for signed or unsigned operations. This shift right, not that case in the compiler, or if you're writing assembly by hand, you need to be aware of it. Some questions about compiler using these shifts. Okay, and one nitpicking thing. So I'm telling you, okay, if you do a shift of a signed number, it's going to do this arithmetic shift. And C is not quite true. The C standard says that actually compilers get to choose if it's arithmetic or something else. They have to document it. They can't just like crash your program, but they get to choose. But I do not know of any compiler which doesn't choose to make an arithmetic shift, because you almost always there's hardware support for it and it's useful. Another thing worth noting is that you would think that doing say x over 100, let's say we have an unsigned x and we do that, you'd expect that would shift in a whole bunch of zeros and we get 0. In C, shifting by an amount that's wider than thing that you're shifting, and our unsigned int presumably is 4 bytes or 32 bits, so 100 is much bigger than that, is undefined behavior. And this is an undefined behavior that will probably actually get you in trouble sometimes, because the way the shift right instruction works in x86 and many other platforms is that it only uses the lower bits of the shift amount. So the processor takes the number 100 and looks at the bottom 5 bits to figure out how much the shift, and that's not going to be 100. it's going to be a much smaller number, and that's going to result in not getting zeros that you expect. So questions about these nits with shifts in C, things you can't do or have to assume? Yeah. Question, if we shift EAX, what does it do to the rest of the register REX? So the same rule we talked about with setting EAX, setting the rest of REX applies. So if you set EAX to a value, the bits of REX that aren't in EAX get set to zero. Okay, other questions? Okay, so we know about arithmetic shifts. So what happens here? So I have shift 2. I'm using signed ints, so I'm saying my compiler chooses arithmetic shifts. And what's the result of shifting by 2? Is supposed to be somewhat similar to dividing by 2 to the 2, or 4. Who would like more time? Okay, a bunch of people. Okay. So, if you aren't, I recommend working out what the bit pattern looks like. Okay, so who thinks A, B, C, D, E, F, okay, something, G, something else, no clue, people seem at least not confident here. So we have sort of, I think, The plurality answer was D, followed by C. So let's talk about square and ways you might get your answer. So one thing you might say is, oh, negative 6 divided by 4. If we think of writing that in, so if we're doing this like as math, this is going to be negative 3/2. And if we were doing this in C, we'd say, oh, if I do division, it rounds towards 0. So I'd expect to get negative 1. But let's look at what happens with the bit shift. So we're going to have, first we have to convert 6 to bits. So I have 6 here. We have our 1's place, our 2's place, our 4's place, 8's place, and so on in binary. 6 is 110. And I'm going to convert to negative 6 by flipping all the bits and adding 1. So I flip all the bits here. So I have a bunch of 1's and 001. I add 1. 1 plus 1 is 10. Carry the 1. Add it to 0. And we get a bunch of 1's, a 0, a 1, and a 0. To do my bit shift, I'm going to get rid of these bottom 2 bits because I'm shifting over by 2. So that's what we said very explicitly to do. And it's an arithmetic shift. So I'm going to copy the sign bit. So I'm going to shift in 1's. And I shift in a bunch of 1's, and I get this number, which happens to be negative 2. I recognize it as negative 2 because we did this earlier. But if we didn't, we can flip all the bits. And add 1 to convert it to a positive number. And we see that that is positive 2 in binary. So the original must have been negative 2. So our answer is negative 2. So questions? So something you'll note from this is that this means that this function is different, is not the same as if we had return x divided by 4. So this is a case where the compiler can't just turn dividing by 4 into a shift. They're not the same for these sign cases because of that rounding. So you might, so yes, question? Is there a reason I chose 4 to divide by? Just to have an example that was different than the previous one. So we would have similar rounding questions, you know, with a bunch of different numbers. So if I divided by 2, which would be shifting 1, then, well, we wouldn't have any rounding issues, right? If we get negative 3, it would be exact, no problem. But, so, yeah, but we'll have similar rounding issues anytime we have rounding. Right, say, what is, so this means that, you know, if I just write x divided by 4, the compiler generally can't just generate a shift. And one thing the compiler could do, they would say, well, that's too bad, I'm going to use that slow division operator. We mentioned the division operator is really slow. So what the compiler will actually do sometimes is it will say, well, it's really slow, but division's really slow, so I really want to avoid it, but I need to fix the rounding. So, for example, when I tell AskGCC to compile a function which basically consists of return the argument divided by 8, this is what it generates. And what it's doing with this extra code is that division in C, it rounds towards 0. So we expected, if we were doing the normal C division, that negative 6 divided by 4 would give us negative 1, not negative 2, because that's the number that's closer to 0 of what we can round to. Arithmetic shift rounds towards negative infinity. That is, it always, always rounds down, even for negative numbers, which is why we got negative 2. And compilers, well, they still want to use the fast shift operator instead of division, so they'll do it and this is the code that GCC generates to do it. So what it does is it takes the argument, it adds 7 to it, and you can think of this as kind of like if you want to change the rounding for rounding to an integer, you'd like add a half, same kind of idea. Or you'd add like 0.9, same kind of idea. So it's adding 7 to make it round in the opposite direction before we divide by 8. Then it's checking if it's negative, so we only actually add 7 if it's negative. And the way it's doing this is it's doing this condition code setting instruction and this conditional move instruction. So this is basically a move and a conditional jump in one instruction. We'll talk about that instruction later. And then it's doing a shift of either the original number or the number plus 7, depending on whether we started with negative or not. So basically, if it's negative, we shift number plus 7 over, otherwise we shift number over by 3 to divide by 8. And this is how GCC deals with the shift rounding differently. And yeah, even though this is a bunch of extra work, it's still faster than using the division instruction. So questions on this strategy here? Question, how is it possible that it's faster than the division instruction? So the division instruction, as we mentioned, like on my processor, it depends on your system, but seems to be quoted as being around 6 cycles. Most of these instructions probably take around 1 cycle each, and you can do more things at the same time as them. So yes, even though, so just because, so we have just enough room that, yeah, it's still faster even though this seems like more computation. It turns out division is very complicated, mainly because it has to handle like dividing by 7, which obviously is not so simple if you were doing it with not division instructions. Other questions? So, talked about shift right. So another thing we might want to do is multiplying. So, for example, if I want to move my A I extracted as the top nibble back to the top nibble, that's multiplying by 16. And in hardware, you might say, wait a moment, this is just the same as adding a bunch of zeros. Just like if I have to multiply by 10 on my hand, for decimal numbers, I'm just going to add a zero. I'm not going to carefully do long multiplication. Same thing's true in hardware. Wouldn't it be nice to expose this instead of the multiply instruction? And yeah, we have a shift left operation for that. And C, you can use in the other direction. So you may know this as the operator for C out. This is how it started as the shift left operator for numbers. And it always shifts in zero. There's a shift left instruction that it corresponds to. There's no other version of this. Well, there is, but there's no difference that we care about with the other version of it because we always want to shift in zeros to do a multiply operation. So questions about shift left? And shift left is just multiplying. Okay. So we have these operators. Let's talk about another thing that's convenient to do in hardware that we want to expose. And that's, let's say I want to get this 2 here from 1F20 in hex. So in hardware, with our bits on wires, that's again really easy. I have 4 wires that hold the value. It's free. I just only use those 4 wires and ignore the others. But how do we write a function for it? And this isn't so easy to do in math, but we can do it in math. So, it's not so obvious how we do it in math. So let's sort of, one way we can lay it out is that I'm going to take my 1F20, I'm going to strip off the bottom 4 bits, and then I'm going to strip off the top bits. My question is, how do I do each step? And the first step is going to be a shift operation, which we could have also done with division, but we know about shift. And the second step, we're going to have to do some math. We'll talk about how to make it more efficient than doing some math. Who would like some more time? Let's start with the first part, which hopefully people still bring it. So who thinks our first part is A, B, C, D? Okay, we have everyone's replies. Yes, this is a shift by 4. Why 4? Because this 0 here is 4 bits. Okay. So how about our second part? So who thinks A, B, C, D, E, F, G. Okay, so no clue? Okay. So the plurality got the best answers, D. So what's going on here? So if we think of this hex number here, this is 1 times 16 to the 2. Plus OXF, or 15, times 16 to the 1, plus 2 times 16 to the 0. And what I want to do is I want to get rid of all the high powers of 16. So how do I do that? I divide the whole thing by 16 and take the remainder. And that remainder is going to be 16 is going to be, it's going to equal something with the remainder of 2. And another way you can think of it is if you, like, if you divide by 10, you get the last digit of a number. Same thing applies for dividing by 16 hexadecimal numbers. So, questions about why this works? Yeah. Question, I have the remainder 2. So, because I have the 2 after the 0. So the idea is that this modulus operation gives it, the remainder would be what we'd get as the result. Does that answer your question? Okay. Other questions? Okay. So we can do this with modulus, and you might say, okay, well, division was slow. How slow is modulus? And it turns out that if you want to do a general modulus, like if you just like you want to do a general division, the instruction you use for that in assembly in x86 is the divide instruction. It gives you the remainder and the quotient. But that would be slow, so we're going to talk about a faster way. But we can write this, and also you could do it in the other direction. So we can write this. But it seems like if we're doing modulus, and the natural way of implementing modulus is actually dividing, and division is slow, we want something faster. So what can we do that's, you know, faster? And there should be something faster, because in hardware it's super simple. I just get these bits. And basically we want some way of exposing, you know, accessing particular bits to the software, you know, that's easy, just like in hardware, it's super easy to like do something with a particular bit and not other bits. So how are you going to expose that to the software? And the sort of main way that processors have decided to do this is by exposing one of their sort of simple building blocks that are used to manipulate bits, which are gates. So gates are pieces of hardware that take in two values and produce a result that's a calculation of them. So on the left side here, I have an XOR gate. If I give it a 0 and a 0, it outputs a 0. Get a 0 and a 1, it outputs a 1. 1 and a 0, it outputs a 1. A 1 and a 1, it outputs a 0. And I also have here an AND gate. So these gates, they take in some bits, and they output a bit that's a function of those bits. And we're going to expose these to software in some convenient way to allow us to manipulate individual bits. And a way we'll represent these operations is going to write down these sort of gates we have as truth tables to tell us what they do. So here is an operation we're going to call AND. You may have seen before. It's like the same. It's similar to logical AND. And with bits, something to note, a way we can sort of remember how AND works, if we AND with 1, it keeps the thing we ANDed with the same. If we AND with 0, it clears the thing. So if we have a bit and we want to keep it the same, we AND it with 1. We want to keep it, clear it, we AND it with 0. That may not seem very useful yet, but we'll have a reason why. And the reason why we're going to want to think about AND in this way is that we're going to sort of construct a set of bits, which is a number, that tells us what we want to do with the bits. And for some bits, we're going to want to keep them the same. And for some bits, we're going to have to clear them. And we're going to construct a number with our instructions that we'll call a mask, indicating these are the bits I want to keep, these are the bits I want to clear. And then there's going to be an operator that takes that mask and applies it. And what it's going to do is it's going to do what we call a bitwise AND. So it's going to treat its values as an array of bits, and it's going to do the AND operation, which in hardware is this single gate that's very efficient, on each of the bits. So for example, I'll start with a simple example. Well, from our truth table, 1 ANDed with 1 is 1, 1 ANDed with 0 is 0. But more complicated, we have 2 ANDed with 4. So 2 is 0, 0, 1, 0, and 4 is 0, 1, 0, 0. And what we're going to do this bitwise AND operation is I'm going to take each of the bits. So I'm going to start with the ones place, and I'm going to say 0 ANDed with 0, and that truth table is 0. 1 ANDed with 0 in that truth table is 0. 0 ANDed with 1 is 0, and so on. 0 ANDed with 0 is 0. And that's how I'm going to compute my result. So I'm just taking each place in the binary number and applying this AND operation. And a way we can view this is that this is saying take 2, keep the 4's place, and clear everything else. So that's another way I can read this operation. But by ending with 4, I'm saying keep the 4's place, the only bit set in 4, and clear everything else. And similarly, for this operation here, I'm saying take 10 and keep the 1, 2, and 4's place, and clear everything else. And you see, that's kind of close to where we were trying to get originally, keeping only certain places. I can write out, have the example of what here. This is 10. So we have our 1, 2, 4, and 8's place. We see 10 is 8 plus 2, so 1, 0, 1, 0. And 7 is 0, 1, 1, 1. So when we end with 7, we're just keeping the bottom three bits and clearing everything else, we end up with 2. So questions about how bitwise end works and this interpretation of it as telling us to keep certain bits and clear others. If we think of ending with 7 is keep the bottom three bits, the 1s, 2s, and 4s place, clear everything else. Yes?
How do we know which places to keep?
So the 7 has a 1 in the places we're keeping and a 0 otherwise. So if we wanted to keep other places, we figure out what number corresponds to it, so we make what we call a mask corresponding to the places we want to keep. Other questions? Some people look confused, so I assume there should be some, but... Okay, so I've shown this bitwise end operation, and the format I've shown it in is what it looks like in C. And in assembly, it's the AND instruction. And this might seem like kind of tedious, because we're doing, if we think of bitwise ANDing 64-bit registers, we're doing 64 of these operations. They're simple, but we're doing 64 of them. Why is this a good thing for the hardware to expose? And it turns out in hardware, well, we can implement this very efficiently because we can just have enough gates for the whole number and just do it all as one big operation. So this ends up being very fast and efficient by just us throwing enough things at it, you know, hardware at it, which turns out to be very small and fast, to just do it all at once. So even though by hand, to do the bitwise AND operation, I would go do the 1's place, then the 2's place, then the 4's place, and so on, and the hardware, they're just doing them all at the same time. So it's really fast. So now that we know about this bitwise end operation, let's use it to make some more efficient versions of our get second nibble. So here, I'm doing the same thing we did before. I'm going to take my value, I'm going to shift it over, and then I'm going to bitwise end with a number which has a 1 in the 1's place, the 2's place, the 4's place, and the 8's place. And that's going to keep the bottom 4 bits. Everything else, it has a 0, so when I bitwise AND, it's going to be set to 0. So here, if my number, you know, is, and I'm representing the bits here, so I have A bits, B bits, C bits, D bits, shifting by 4 removes the D bits, ending with OXF sets everything but the C bits to 0. That makes sense. Questions? Comments, confusion. Okay. And another way I could have done this is I could have said, rather than getting the number we want at the low at least significant places, I could have just directly said, I'm going to first clear all the bits but the bits I want. And a way I did that is I constructed this number here, OXF0, which has 1s in the 4 bits I want to keep, and zeros everywhere else. I ended with that number, and that means that when I take my big binary number, I end up with only those 4 places having non-zero values, possibly. And then I shift over to get, you know, that those values in the least significant place. So questions how the second version works. Okay, and so both of these have a straightforward translation to assembly, where we use that AND operator at some point. Okay, so I showed bitwise AND, and I told you that, you know, we can think of this operation as allowing us to select particular bits to keep and other bits to clear, that is to set to zero. We also have a few other bitwise operators that work in a similar way, but they have different truth tables, and therefore we need to think of them differently when saying, what does it mean to do this operation with a number? So bitwise AND, it's selecting bits, basically, or clearing bits. We also have bitwise OR, and you can think of bitwise OR as setting particular bits. So if I bitwise OR with a number which has the 2 splice set to 1, I'm setting the 2 splice to 1 regardless of what it was before. We have bitwise XOR, which we can think of as flipping bits. So if I bitwise XOR with a number which has a 1 in the 4th place, I'm flipping the 4th place bit. And if I, and 0 is doing nothing for both OR and XOR. If I bitwise OR with 0, it doesn't change anything. If I bitwise XOR with a 0 bit, it doesn't change anything. So those bits are unchanged. So questions about our high-level view, how we can think of OR and XOR in this case. So we have bitwise OR. Then, so for example, if I take 10, OR with 7, ORing with 7 in this case is saying set the bottom 3 bits to 1. That's what ORing with 7 does. So we take 10, we make all the bottom 3 bits that aren't 1, 1, and we end up with 15. Bitwise XOR with 7 is saying flip the bottom 3 bits. So I take 10, I flip the bottom bit, which is 0, to 1. I flip the second bit, which is 1, to 0. I flip the third bit, which is 0, to 1. And the 7 told me only to change those bottom 3 bits, and the other ones are unchanged. So that's bitwise XOR. Questions about those operators? Okay. There's one more bitwise operator that's a little different. And this is one which has only one operand. And this is tilde, or complement. This tilde character, it's called complement. And it's kind of the bitwise version of exclamation point. So you might have said, oh, single ampersand is kind of a different version of double ampersand, so this is kind of the version of exclamation point, the negation operator. So rather than, you know, doing a logical operation, it flips individual bits. So for example, complement of 0 is negative 1 because we flip all the bits to 1. And all 1s and signed numbers is negative 1. Complement of 2, it has to be negative 3. We flip all the bits and get this number with most of the bits set. Okay, so questions about the complement operation? I guess I should emphasize, so what's different than exclamation point here is that if I do exclamation point of 2, that's going to be a 0, right? We aren't working with individual bits. We're saying, is the whole thing 0 or true or not? Which is very different than what complement does, where we're looking at individual bits. Other questions? Okay. So our lab tomorrow is going to be a bunch of bit manipulation puzzles. So we know the bitwise operators now, and the assignment is to use them to solve some problem that, you know, maybe you can do with normal arithmetic comparisons and so on with these bitwise operators. And you can do it in multiple steps, so on. But the reason why we're doing this is partly because it's good for thinking about hardware design, because these bitwise operators are much closer to what we have in the hardware when we're dealing with binary numbers. So the tools we have are moving wires around and doing these simple binary operations, so it'd be nice to know what we can do with them. Also, for understanding the bitwise operators, so we'd like you to understand these extra instructions that pretty much every processor provides, and also because some people think they're good interview questions even though they probably aren't. Okay, so I'm going to go through one of these puzzles in my remaining time, and we'll finish up, go through some more examples of more complicated things on Thursday, and then move on to talking about instruction sets. So, we'll talk about how we can do this with bitwise operators. So there's a ternary operator in C, in C++, in Java, which basically, if I do W equals X question mark Y colon Z, that's the same as if X, assign Y to W, otherwise assign Z to W. So the result of the ternary operator, this expression here, is Y if X is true, Z otherwise. And we're going to try to implement this without if and else, using the bitwise operators. I'm going to go through how to do it, and I'm going to do that, and this is a strategy I want you to remember for the lab and following homework, by starting from simpler subproblems. So I'm going to start by saying, let's assume X, Y, and Z are just one bit, and solve this problem, and we're going to solve it even simpler version, we're going to like replace Z with 0, replace Y with 0. So let's start with that. We'll talk about why that's useful in a bit. Right here, actually. So let's say X, Y, and Z are just 0 or 1. We'll make it be any number later. Let's say they're just 0 or 1. And I'm going to say that if I solve these two problems, I've solved the whole thing. Why? Because I can say OR these two things together. Why does that work? Because OR, remember, keeps all the bits, sets all the bits in common. So if I do 0 OR with something, I get something. If I do something OR with 0, I get something. So a common strategy you'll see in doing things with bitwise operators is that we'll take 0 OR with something that might be 0, you know, to construct results from these subproblems. So my two subproblems are if X, return Y, otherwise return 0. And if X returns 0, otherwise return Z. So let's solve this first part. So I want to write bitwise operators where if X is true, I return Y, and X and Y are 0 or 1. So they're the only values I have to worry about. So let's have a table of all our possible results. Since X and Y are 0, that looks exactly like the truth table for AND. So if X and Y are just 0 or 1, I can implement this with just bitwise AND. And I have that part. The other part was the opposite. So a way I can implement that is I can just flip all the bits in X and AND with Z, and that will give me the right result. So questions on how I got that part? So for just with X, Y, and Z being 0 or 1, here is my solution. Okay. So then I want to make it so I want to deal with Y and Z being any number. So this doesn't work if Y and Z are any number, because then I have like 1 ANDed with 2, and I would expect to get 2, and I get 0. So how can I fix that? So what I can say is I want to turn this part here into Y ANDed with a mask, where the mask is all 1s if X is 1, and all 0s otherwise. So what I want to do is I want to go from X equals 1 to all 1s, and to X equals 0, all zeros. And there's a rather non-obvious trick that will make sense when you see it, I can use to do this, which is minus x. And just because negative 1 is all 1s in 2's complement. So questions? Works. And if I want to do the opposite, I can flip the x to from 1 to 0. And that gives me, this solution we'll go over next time. So questions on this, and then we'll talk about this next time. When did you see this before the lab? But basically what we did is we said, oh, negative 1 is going to be 1, 1, 1s, and 0 is going to be all zeros. We're ending that with y to get y to 0. And then I'm flipping the x 1 to 0, doing the same trick to get all 1s or 0s, and ending that with z to get z or 0. So questions? OK. Well, see you on Thursday. We'll